WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. I'm Jason Mann, and with me today is Kay Sawyer Paul, also of FairToFlare.com. How are you doing today?
Not bad.
Good to hear. And today we're going to talk about the main event of WrestleMania 22. It was John Cena against Triple H for the WWE Championship. Interesting story here, painted as John Cena, the guy who's not a great wrestler but is a good fighter, against the technical darling Triple H, the very experienced multi-time champion. And sort of an interesting way to present it, sort of addressing, I guess, some of Cena's weaknesses both in the ring and sort of having the split fan support at this point. What do you think?
Split fan is generous, I'd say.
Oh, I don't know. I would even say in this crowd that was, is considered and certainly was Triple H partisan, there was probably 20 to 30% that at least was cheering Cena. Especially,
okay, but 20 to 30 isn't split.
Well, okay, but it's not like it's 100%. I mean,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not divided in half, but it's still split among two portions.
Certainly not the ECW show a few months later.
No. I mean, yeah, he is, yeah. And it was different crowds depending on different cities, too, as it is mm-hmm. often today, although he's cheered more than he's booed today in general.
Mm-hmm.
But, as far as the build went, there wasn't really too much that went into it. I mean, the SmackDown, Rey Mysterio won the Royal Rumble, so it wasn't even set up by that. It was just basically Cena had a feud with Edge that he lost the title very briefly and then regained it 3 weeks later. But he'd been basically, other than that, had been champion since WrestleMania 21 when he won the belt for the first time. So, was pretty much the longstanding champion, and Triple H, became number one contender. They had a few face-to-face confrontations that were a little bit interesting. Triple H kind of was, he was kind of being smug, but he kind of, in some of his promos, portrayed Cena as just a little bit of a joke, I guess, which I guess played really into the story of the match with Triple H not taking Cena's wrestling acumen seriously. And they did kind of a, tag match with Cena and Triple H facing off against Randy Orton, Rey Mysterio, and Kurt Angle, which was the SmackDown main event of this show, which was interesting. I think that was the first Saturday Night's main event when they brought it back, and
mm-hmm.
it seemed like a big deal at the time because Saturday Night's main event was a big deal, but I guess people didn't really want to watch that wrestling on network television when they get plenty of it on cable. So
we've talked a couple of times before, and you've had other people talk before about matches that ended WrestleMania that maybe shouldn't have ended WrestleMania, mm-hmm. right? I think WrestleMania 8 certainly comes to mind right away, just because it's fresh. But do you think that this was another case of that, where perhaps the triple threat from SmackDown, where Mysterio wins his first world title, do you think that might have been a better ending to this show?
I don't know. I don't remember that really getting the kind of reaction that this one did. I don't think people were quite as into that story as they were into this one. I mean, maybe I'm wrong about that, but that match was nothing particularly special either, although it was, only given 8 minutes. So if it had been given, more of a WrestleMania main event, length, then you know you could have seen it.
Who knows,
Honestly,
right?
I mean, you know, if you think about, you know, the mid card, well, I guess there wasn't really anything that strong in the mid card. I was thinking Angle Michaels, but that obviously was WrestleMania before this.
The year before, yeah.
They had Foley and Edge, but I mean, as fun as that was, that wasn't, you know, obviously really a main event worthy thing. So I don't know. I think they basically made the right choice. You know,
Okay.
I don't really see this, you know, and the crowd was certainly, you know, into the entire match. It was just, you know, giving Triple H the you know, the big reaction. Very, very smarky crowd, which, you know, reminds me, when exactly would have Triple H become the darling of the smarks? Because that just sort of goes against my I don't know, my sense of things.
I think it's unfair to call this like a smark audience. To the uninitiated, smark is a term generously given to people who think they understand wrestling but have not given their arguments proper thought. I think that's how I look at that group of people. I don't think he was ever a darling of them. I think what happened with his alignment and influence by Ric Flair over the years, people began to view him as an extension of that style. Whether that was true or not, Triple H ended up becoming what WWE audiences saw as an old school wrestler, the kind of guy who wrestled like they used to in the good old days. And I don't know how much of that is just like in the heads of people, but he did in many ways represent a certain wrestling style that the WWE didn't really teach its younger guys to do. Triple H wrestles a lot more like Harley Race than almost anybody else, right? And Harley Race had a very, very unique style.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's a little, that comparison's a little overblown, just because he does some of the same knee-based offense, and because Ross has pushed that so heavily in the commentary.
It,
But we'll
true,
go with it.
but what I mean more than just like the offense is I guess the gruffness of it. At some point in time, Triple H wrestles like he's dumber than he is. And I don't mean that to be insulting. I mean that to seem like he's more raw, he's more animal than human. And Race had that as well, where you could tell that he wasn't thinking like a sophisticated man. He was a killer.
I'll grant you that.
And you do hear that in the commentary here with Ross talking about the different styles between Cena and Triple H.
Yeah, and they also emphasize the idea of Cena kind of being the working class fighter versus, you know, Triple H being the man of privilege. It kind of reminds me of Rocky IV with Rocky like training out in the, you know, the wilderness, and you know, Ivan Drago being the you know, the having all the machines hooked up to him, and you know, the technology and money versus the, you know, the man of nature kind of deal.
Rocky IV is my favorite.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's funny, but I consider it like
For
probably
all the wrong
like,
reasons, of course.
yeah, I consider it like the, maybe like the best terrible movie of all time, and I'm also sort of amused by the like what seems like 35 minutes of montages in that movie. Like
So many
obviously, yeah,
montages.
obviously, like I mean, all the Rockies are montage heavy, but that one like feels like it's like, you know, a third of that movie is montage.
I love me a good Rocky montage.
All right, well, that's good. You know, you're a man of you have tastes.
There's
So
no video for this match. There's no hype video.
no, well, there wasn't all that much to hype. You know, I
It's
mean,
true that there wasn't really a
it was a kind of a minimalist
lot.
approach. They didn't do a whole lot of angles, which is good, because you know, when you do a whole lot of angles, that you know, they tend to mean less if you do too many of them. But you know, like I said, there was nothing particular. You know, maybe there's something I'm forgetting, but I don't, you know, there was nothing
No, I don't
particularly
think there was.
memorable about, you know, the setup for this. You know, but that's okay. I mean, it, you know, it was fine. People were very into the match. You know,
So
and
at the time, I found this match to be a big disappointment.
okay.
And I don't know why that was. Maybe because I was still under the impression that WrestleMania main events should either spark an entirely new story for the next little while, or it should be like this huge finale to a giant feud. One of the two. And most WrestleManias up until then had sort of delivered on one of the two premises. This one did neither. It didn't like climax a long going story, and it didn't begin anything either. These two would go on to do entirely different things after this show.
It's true,
and they were doing entirely different things almost up to this show.
Mm-hmm.
It was like it felt very one off, which WrestleMania main events rarely do.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of times they won't. I mean, a lot of times in the past they wouldn't necessarily go back to it, but it would definitely be like a finale of a big story, and mm-hmm. this didn't like feel like a big story. I agree with that. Yeah, I don't. You know, obviously they had the plans to, you know, bring to turn Triple H and reform DX, you know, and all that. But you know, I don't know if they ever, you know, if that was the plan the entire time, or if that just kind of, is kind of the way it worked out, or if they had. We're thinking about doing rematches. I don't know. I
sometimes wonder if this match was part of the plan, or if this got hotshotted in a sense.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting. I actually, you know, I like the match, you know, for the most part, especially the last few minutes. Just, you know, really they do some nice work, and, you know, really get the crowd into it. You know, they definitely rely on some tricks. You know, they, you know, there's a ref bump. You know, they you know, they do some, you know, finisher kicking out of, you know, that mm-hmm. the kind of, you know, standard stuff that will that a lot of wrestlers try to do to kind of give it a classic feel. But in this case, yeah, I think it worked. I don't think they overdid, you know, the near falls. Like, I thought, like, it, you know, it built pretty well. Like, it, you know, it told a pretty good story, you know, of Triple H, you know, kind of outclassing Cena with some wrestling, you know, doing some chain wrestling and slapping his head, you know, working an arm, a hammer lock, you know, just kind of, you know, doing some stuff like that. I'm also amused that when you know, when Triple H is doing all of this, the FU Cena chant pops up, which my DVD actually kept. I was surprised. I figured that would have been edited. It might have just been really hard to edit it out, but and I was amused that when Jim Ross called them old school fans, the idea, yeah. Of course, fans in the 1970s actually chanting that in a crowd, which, you know, maybe a few of them might have, but, you know, you know, the weird thing about their styles is, like, I don't think of them as being, like, all that different, really. Like, I think of Triple H as, like, more of a brawler than a technical wrestler. Not that he can't do the technical stuff, and you're right, you know, mm-hmm. he definitely can work that stuff in, and it's more natural for him than it is for Cena. But I think of most of Triple H's best matches are, you know, very much have, you know, major brawling elements. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. we've talked about some of them before, obviously. So
yeah.
I
wonder if maybe instead of like Triple H's physical style reflecting like an old school wrestling so much, that maybe it's just part of his character. Like it's very overt that Triple H, the character, is very intelligent and has a deep knowledge of wrestling history. Whereas John Cena as a character is fairly fresh. Somewhat unknown at this point, actually. Like we've been aware of him as a character for 3 or 4 years, but they didn't begin to like strip layers off of Cena for a little while later.
Yeah, and he was still sort of like he was still doing the rapper thing. I mean, he, you know, he was kind mm-hmm. of evolving from that, but it wasn't like he's changed a lot since this point. He, you know, he's become more of like, you know, a regular hero. He doesn't really, you know, he kind of had like a little bit of a rebel thing going on at this point, and he's kind of, you know, that edge has kind of been, you know, stripped off over the years. So I would think he would kind of be thought of a little bit more of as a traditionalist today, just because he's, you know, kind of become the establishment guy, where this time he was still, you know, kind of the, you know, rebel working his way up, or, you know, at least, you know, becoming the face of WWE and, you know, and the establishment, so to speak.
Certainly that. I wonder if, as well, there's just a level of dimension. Triple H was such an established character who had been around for such a long time at this point that you couldn't help but have a fully formed three-dimensional character with lots of ways of looking at him. Whereas John Cena was still still growing, still forming as a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could only look at John Cena so many ways at this point.
Yeah.
And that honestly, if you look at this match, Triple H is the more interesting character.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not surprised by the cheers.
Mm-hmm. What would you say makes him a more interesting character?
I don't know. Just awareness. I think it comes down to awareness. I think when you look at the brief prelude to the match, they show this press conference where Triple H says, you know, you get really nervous around WrestleMania time, and I've been in a lot of WrestleMania main events, but I'm going to take this one easy because this is going to be the easiest match I've ever been in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd never really heard that from Triple H,
yeah.
Right? He was cocky, certainly, and he insulted his competitors, but he never dismissed them so easily.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of might have been, you know, when I was thinking about when they were doing the build, which, mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of, yeah, it was just like, you felt like, yeah, it was weird because you don't usually see. I mean, really, anyone in WWE, you don't usually, you know, unless you're like talking about someone who's like, you know, like a main eventer versus like a, you know, a Santino guy. I mean, usually the mm-hmm. heel will dismiss the Santino guy, or occasionally they'll have the whole like, you know, like a guy at like a high level will challenge a guy, or a guy at low level will challenge the guy at the high level, and then the
mm-hmm.
guy at the high level will be like, "Who are you?" You know, it's always the comedy thing they do, you know, or "What's mm-hmm. your name again?" or whatever. That's a good point. They definitely don't do that very often. So that, you know, mm-hmm. kind of made this different. Kind of made it interesting, I guess. But you know, like I said, I think as far as the match goes, I think, you know, it's a pretty strong, like, you know, Triple H does some, you know, pretty good bumping, takes like a really huge one into the corner, onto the floor. And also they do some, like, they work pretty stiff. Like, they both hit each other with really stiff clotheslines, you know, like Triple H's offense looks pretty strong. Like Cena, you know, like kind of like, you know, one of the criticisms of him, especially now, is that, you know, his offense is kind of light. Like, but you know, he really locks in the STF when mm-hmm. he locks that in. You know, that that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think it's, you know, as far as it, you know, it's well constructed. The, you know, the work looks good. You know, there's nothing that's too sloppy or anything like that. So, I think it starts a little slow. They kind of have like a long chin lock and sleeper kind of thing in the middle, but you know, they,
do you think the chin lock was on purpose? It comes right after Cena's first sort of offensive flurry, and it's a couple minutes after they sort of do a couple grapples, and they let the crowd really sink into Cena. And then Cena just hits this chin lock, and the chin lock is the laziest, least wrestling-like maneuver anybody could do, right? It will make someone boo you. If they don't think you're a good wrestler and you use a chin lock, you will get booed.
Okay. I was actually thinking of later when Triple H got a sleeper that became a long chin lock, which was after the first Let's Go Cena Sucks dueling chants, which I would like to express how much, again, I despise dueling chants, which I think adds a little bit.
I have that in my notes, actually. I have that in my notes. It's written here, during that chant, does Jason hate it?
Yes, which adds to my contention that you argued with a little bit earlier that this is in fact a smarky crowd, but
it is to an extent. This is a knowledgeable wrestling crowd.
Well, they you know, they may know things. That doesn't necessarily make them knowledgeable. But
well, that's why I define smark as a knowledgeable crowd that doesn't argue well.
Fair enough. So, anyway,
but yeah, so what I was going to say before we got into the physicality of the match was, this is, to me, in my mind, this is an okay WrestleMania main event. It's certainly not in the top 10 or top 15, but it's okay. But we talked about this earlier, and you said you really liked this match. So I want you to sort of argue the points here to say why you think it's a really, really good one. I'm totally open to having my mind changed. Other than the fact that the crowd doesn't think Cena's a good wrestler, and they wrestle the kind of match that leads, or at least tries to lead people to realize that he is a good wrestler, I don't see what else is going on.
As I said, I think that the work is pretty strong. I think it builds, like the way they work the crowd and the way they're able to, get the crowd to peak at exactly the right time for the, for the finish, I think is strong. And, there's a lot of WrestleMania main events, and some of the ones that you mentioned that maybe shouldn't have closed the show, all of those matches really, just kind of suffered in crowd reaction and usually in match quality. But this one, they kept the fans through it. Even the, even by the end, there's a very, very, the Triple H gets almost all the reaction at the beginning, but yet, toward the middle, toward the end, it's more, Cena's getting a louder reaction and his fans are coming out. I kind of think at least some of the fans were sort of buying, Cena as, if not necessarily a great technical wrestler, certainly a worthy competitor in this fight, certainly on Triple H's level. And, I just think, like I said, when I watched it again, my memory of it, it was a stronger match than when I saw it this time. I still, like, given that there are only 27 WrestleMania main events, I'd have to, or final matches, I'd have to think about it. But I would say this probably would go in the top 15. It'd be right in the middle, I guess, of WrestleMania main events. But I think the story, I think the action, I think, I think those elements are what makes it a very good match and, a worthy WrestleMania main event. Although I would agree, at least in like the storytelling up to the match and the build, I think is one of the weaker, or at least one of the, maybe not weaker, but one of the less, memorable in WrestleMania history. One of the more, very standard, basic, just, we're setting up a match for pay-per-view, but not really like a WrestleMania worthy story, as you kind of alluded to before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, I think the match itself is stronger than fine, but I think the story as a whole is probably fine. Another topic that I don't want us to forget. What did you think of the entrances?
I wanted to forget the entrances. Yeah. I actually thought the match was a good enough match that if they decided, okay, what we're going to do, like if they wanted to do this match, like they telegraphed us, this was the match they were going to plan for, they could have prepared us for it better. Okay. This was a fine match. Take it completely out of any context, bell to bell, completely fine match. However, it's a decidedly slower paced, more quote unquote old school style wrestling match. Like even the ref bump doesn't really lead to much, right? It's just a pretty quick little thing. It's a pretty fair contest, bell to bell.
Right. Well, the ref bump allows the Triple H to get the sledgehammer.
To get the sledgehammer, yeah.
And then
but I mean,
the
in the context of professional wrestling, nothing illegal happened, right? Nothing cheap happened. Nothing screwy happened.
It was an attempt to have something screwy happen, but it was foiled by John Cena's courage and pluck.
That's right. That's exactly. So I feel like they could have prepared us for this by going entirely the quote-unquote old-school route. right? There's certain language you can use to prepare someone for a match. And Jim Ross was doing it at the beginning of this match. He did it great. I really wish they had done that in the weeks leading up to it. And this entrance for the two of them tells me that they didn't have this fully thought out as a old school style thing, because the entrances are pure cartoon, right? They're like, in all other respects, this match was like a NWA World Heavyweight Title from the late 80s style kind of thing.
Sorry,
maybe early 80s because of the Harley Race stuff.
Yeah. I was thinking this kind of would fit almost the Sting Triple H template, or Triple H, Sting Flair template, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, I can kind of see that, you know. Not that I'm comparing Triple H to Flair, really, but as far as, like, kind of the images that people have had of, you know, them at the time, you know, I think that's kind of fair.
But these entrances are so just pure sports entertainment.
Yes. Well, yeah. The if you haven't seen it, Triple H comes out sort of like as a Conan the Barbarian Beastmaster type thing. Sort of sits like in a throne and has his secondary theme, the Bow Down to the King theme. He sits down in the throne, and then Time to Play the Game comes out, and then he walks out. His is, I mean, it's elaborate and kind of fancy, but it's, you know, he is the kind of the goofy outfits really what sort of makes that stand apart. The Cena's, however, they have this wacky video package that like recounts the Depression, and it's like in black and white.
That's what you want to show a Chicago audience.
Exactly. And then they go into a little bit, very briefly, the history of, you know, of Chicago gangsters. And then they have like a bunch of guys in suits, like a limo comes through, like an old, you know, an old 30s looking limo. And then, I guess maybe not a limo, but you know, a car that gangsters would drive, and then a bunch
Teddy
of guys
wagon.
Get out, including CM Punk, who's actually riding, not of course named as CM Punk because he wasn't even on TV yet, but obviously you would recognize him. And then Cena walks
out.
Yeah,
he's very recognizable in retrospect. You know exactly which one he is.
Yeah, I at the time I didn't really know what CM Punk looked like, but I he looked enough familiar enough to me. I was like, who is that guy? You know, I've seen that guy. I feel like I know who that guy is. I've probably seen pictures of CM Punk. But anyway, so then Cena comes out and then has like a Tommy gun and then shoots the Tommy gun up in the air as his music is playing. That's just really weird to see, you know, in 2011 with 2011 eyes, you know, TVPG and all that.
It's just like it just goes to show that whenever you think of WWE as being racist, culturally insensitive, national wise, just blind to things. It's not just races and ethnicities outside of, like, you know, the white middle class American, because God knows they are ignorant to the feelings of those people as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you know, I don't know. It's not like wrestling has a it's like if you want your wrestling to be tasteful, that's kind of a difficult you know, but not that it should be distasteful, but it's sort of it's like wrestling is such a tradition of, you know, kind of being the worst common denominator thing. That's like, so you can't be surprised. It's like you can't really like be upset. Like you can want it to be better, and you can, you know, work to make it better. But it's like, and you know, you can be disappointed when those things happen. But it's like, you know, like if you cover yourself in honey, you can't expect a bear in the woods not to attack you. You know, it's like
a Dr. Philism right there, sir.
Perhaps. But what I'm saying is it's almost like in wrestling's nature, at least in WWE's nature. Like it's just what it does.
Yeah. No, I agree. There's just when you need a little bit more work to shake off all the old carny thorns.
Yeah. You know, but some of that stuff like also makes wrestling like colorful and interesting, even if it doesn't make it, you know, good. You know what I mean? Like, and it's like I feel like some of those elements is like sort of a more healthy way of, you know, for society to kind of like work out some of like the, you know, like their like kind of their inner darker thoughts or beliefs or whatever. you know? Like, I
Oh,
feel
now
like,
we're getting meaningful.
yeah, I don't want to delve too deeply into this, but it's sort of a, kind of a theory that I have, and I'm sure not the only person of, wrestling is kind of like a form of entertainment where, obviously there's a lot of stereotypes in it, but I think, like I said, I think it's like a way, like, it's certainly more healthy for, a 1985 wrestling fan to boo Adrian Adonis than it is for a, like a redneck to beat up a gay dude at a bar or something, Like, I mean, I don't know if I don't, I don't know if like one prevents him from doing the other, but I maybe there's something to that. Maybe there's not. Maybe I'm just totally full of it, but. That all you got?
I think that's a much, much bigger conversation than we're prepared to have based on WrestleMania 22.
I think that's fair. I'm not sure how we got here, but that's okay.
We
We'll
got
have
here
that.
because WWE put us here. How do
Yes.
you sit down and talk about WrestleMania 22's main event without bringing up the incredible cultural insensitivity of showing a highlight clip of a bunch of criminals who have been turned into a stereotype that represent the city that you're broadcasting to, and then bring out your supposed hero draped in the garb and not expect them to boo the crap out of them?
Well, I don't know. Do you think that the fans like in Chicago really
Oh, they
like?
were going to boo him regardless,
Right. I
but
mean, do you think they have a negative image? I mean, like in a like, I mean, do you think they have any more of a negative image of gangsters than the 30s mobsters as society at large would, or like maybe at least American society that would be more familiar with it, or
I'm not suggesting that there's like support groups and a cause and a march needed for this one,
Right.
but cultural insensitivity is cultural insensitivity,
Okay.
and
Like.
painting with a wide brush like that is going to leave some people with a pretty bad taste in their mouths.
Sure. No question. But let me. My last question, which is related to that question, but do you think anyone in that crowd was aware that it could be considered a cultural insensitivity?
I have no idea.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just curious, just like, even if like, yeah, I mean, like when you bring out those ideas, it's like, oh yeah, that's obvious. But just kind of like, when I saw it, that's not exactly what I was thinking. But you make excellent points, and I agree. I just wonder, like, it doesn't matter if they do or they don't. That's not the point that we're making. It's just, like I just wonder if like anyone in that crowd would have thought of that. That's Just curious. Obviously, neither of
It's
us knows, but
I think what it is you is a company, sits down and thinks about, okay, we're having this event in Chicago. Is there anything we can do that's kind of fun for Cena's entrance? Oh, well, Chicago's where all that like mobster stuff happened, right? And that's like a weird sort of American anti-hero kind of cool thing that the kids are into, right? Maybe let's do that. But what happens is there isn't a fact checker in the WWE writing room that thinks, hey, guys, I don't know if maybe this is the best idea.
So back to the match. I guess we'll sort of describe the finish. That is a pretty good deal. Basically, after the early parts, Triple H ends up getting control. Does a lot of knee-based offense, as you might expect.
Oh, I love his knee-based offense.
And then, although, honestly, I think that a lot of knee-based offense that Triple H does was actually done better by Bruce Beefcake at his peak. But we'll go into that argument later, because I know you're going to end up disagreeing, and yeah, that'll be another thing we've talked about. And I'm not really prepared to back that entirely yet. I need to watch more
I'll
Bruce
let it go. I'll
Beefcake,
let it go. I'll
but
let you have it.
I
It's
do have a
cool.
plan to do that eventually. So
I'll
eventually
let you have it.
we'll do a Bruce Beefcake podcast, and we'll have a lot of fun with that.
Okay.
So we Cena makes his comeback, which is the usual as that he does now, which does get some cheers. sets up the five knuckle shuffle, but Triple H gets the spine buster. And Cena does get back in control, does the pump ups, the shoes, and locks in the STFU very, very tightly, by the way. Triple H does make the ropes the first time. Then we get the ref bump as Triple H runs Cena into the ref and then low blows them both at the same time. Now, I'm not entirely sure why the ref wouldn't have had a disqualification there, as he like I'm it seems like he would have like pretty well understood that Triple H's hand had just struck him in the balls. Like I don't think there's any way that he could have like been confused about what happened, but I don't know. Like, I don't know why they chose to ignore this detail and not just have, like, hey, let's have a second referee come in and do the same thing, because it would have been, it absolutely wouldn't have changed anything, and it would have made it, like, more, it would have made it make more sense. But anyway, that was just a weird thing for me.
I think referees are sort of like cats, right? They have like a short-term memory of about 15 seconds.
Okay.
And then everything goes back to, you notice referees like every 15, 20 seconds, they sort of look up and they forget where they are.
Okay. All right. That's a good theory. I like that answer. I'm going to completely not,
like they remember big things like, what to eat and that sort of thing and where to sleep, but don't drink that sort of thing. But like when it comes to like their current surrounding, very, very, very short church of memory.
All right, well, good point. I like it. Anyway, then Triple H gets the sledgehammer. They fight over a little bit, but then knocks Cena in the face, as we mentioned. Then that's a near fall. And then I like that Triple H like doesn't believe it, so he goes for another cover immediately, which also gets to. I like that idea that so staggered by that it can't possibly be true. That I'll just try it again. And then Triple H goes for the pedigree, but then it's reversed into the FU, which also gets two. So as I'm saying, the big moves followed by the two counts.
Yeah.
And then Cena goes for a high cross body, unusual for him, and which misses. But then he reverses the pedigree into the STFU, locking the arm. Now, what I thought was sort of weird is that the ref first checks the other arm as if it's like a sleeper hold, and it goes down twice, but then the third time it doesn't go all the way down, and then he stretches toward the ropes and then taps. Like the whole idea that like he would have passed out, and then I don't know, that's just like a weird like it was weird
cool.
to introduce the element of the passing out before the tapping. Like you would think like there would be like, the tapping first, and then he's in such pain that he would like sort of pass out. But
it's all three things that you can do when you're suffering in a submission move, right? The three basic things. You can either tap out, you can pass out, or you can do the raising the arms three times. These are things that have been established for ever in wrestling. And Triple H does all three of them in reverse order, right? You would think, I mean, there's also like getting to the ropes, which he does earlier. You would think that logically you would tap out if you're just going to give up, right? And then if you're not going to just give up, then maybe you're going to fight it and slowly pass out, but you still do the arm thing. And then the arm goes down for the three and you're passed out and you're done. The opposite happens. He passes out and then seems to wake up and then taps out.
Okay.
Which I think is cool. I think it's a really cool turn for how that sort of sequence is done. I don't think I've ever seen it done like that before.
Okay.
I've never seen someone do the three arm up and down thing and then not get out of the move.
That's a good point. I've never seen that either. I don't think I've seen it either, because obviously when they usually did the three arm thing, it was not really a situation where anyone would tap out, or it was before the tap out was established. So okay, I still think it doesn't entirely make sense, but I'm just gonna but I'll go with it. That's fine. At that point, after the it doesn't go down the third time, Triple H, as he said, stretches his arms toward the rope, is so close, but then immediately taps out. And then they there's just a great image afterward of like a guy with like his hands up in the air. He's completely baffled. He's completely exasperated. Clearly, the smarkiest of all smarks, I'm going to say, even if it's not true. And just in the crowd, it's like it's 100 times better than that Miz Girl image, I think. So I laughed quite uproariously.
He just looks exasperated, just like, what? What do you mean?
Yeah,
what?
Like, what? Like, how is this possible? You know, my guy didn't win. I'm so sad, you know. I take wrestling so seriously, you know.
So seriously.
It's my life. So, yeah. Nerds. So anyway, yeah, you can tell I like the city of Chicago for a lot of things, and I even know some fans there who, including our friends at the Old School Wrestling Podcast. But but yeah, this crowd I was not a huge fan of. So even though, I mean, they were excited, and honestly, like their BS, like there was a couple dueling chants, but honestly, they weren't too bad other than that. I mean, and oh. I don't care if you boo the baby face. Like, that doesn't bother me at all. Just, you know, boo or cheer somebody. Don't, like, be, you know, don't be showing off. That's my whole deal. So, anyway, I'm off my soapbox on that. So, now that you've heard my argument for why this is a better match than you think it is, how do you feel? Have I convinced you at all, or have I failed in my mission to convince you of some significance of this encounter?
You haven't convinced me that the encounter itself is significant. I feel like they did a much better job of doing a similar kind of thing the year later. And you're going to talk to somebody else about Michaels and Cena. And that's cool. I'll look forward to listening to that. And I think that match did everything that this match tried to do and did better. But...
Yeah. Well, probably because it had Shawn Michaels in it instead of Triple H. But...
That. But... But I will say that upon further review, this match is better than I thought. And it certainly got points of interest that are unique from any other WrestleMania main event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is certainly not a skippable WrestleMania main event. There are a couple that you don't need to see. But this is, I would say this is canonical.
Yeah. Yeah, it is definitely like... As far as, like, the significant stories or feuds in WWE history, this is very, very low, you know. But, yeah, I mean, as far as matches itself, as far as, like, kind of, like, being, like, a sort of a picture of what was going in time in wrestling, like, I feel like this is, like, a pretty decent, you know, pretty decent show of that, at least as far as, you know, any singles match would be, you know. Like, I feel like it kind of, you know... paints a decent picture of what wrestling was like in 2006, and you know, and then some. There's always something to that as well.
All right,
fair enough. Well, if that's all we've got, I guess that's all we've got. Thanks for listening, everyone,